Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
This is Good Humans Podcast with me, Cooper Chapman, chatting to the world's best about the inspiring stories that got them to where they are today. Hello, all you good humans. It is absolutely great to be back in podcast world. It's been a couple months off for me. I've been overseas. I've been focusing on a few other things, but I'm very, very excited to be back recording. We've got some huge episodes coming up. This little next run in Good Humans podcast is going to be a little bit different to my last 25 episodes. I'm going to be going a little bit out of athletes, still having some great athlete conversations, but I'm going to be going to a whole bunch of different people. Doesn't have to be a huge profile, just wants to be people who are really doing good things in this world. So I'm going to bring highlights of a whole bunch of amazing humans, and yeah, hopefully you're going to enjoy listening to them. Back into first episode today, I am really excited for this chat. I was very intrigued watching this girl. She was on Big Brother this year, and watching her from the outside, I was like, she looks a bit smarter than she's making out to be on this show. And she played the game amazingly. And since she's left the house, she's become a really big social media star. But the thing that really inspires me about this girl is she's so, so unapologetically herself. She's so open to making mistakes, and she's so open to taking accountability for those mistakes. This is a great conversation. I had a really good time getting to know this girl a lot better. So welcome to the podcast, Tilly Whitfield. How are you going, Till?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
I'm very well. It's nice to be back in Sydney for a little while and getting to catch up with you. But this podcast is all about you, and I'm excited to get to know you a little bit more. You've come on the radar of the whole of Australia in the last year or 6 months, I guess, and we've all fallen in love with you. But let's go back to the original story. Tell me a little bit about yourself. Where'd you grow up? What was your childhood like? Do you have siblings? Let's rewind a little bit.
So, I actually have quite a cool like childhood. I grew up on a farm. Then we moved to like the Northern Beaches. Then we moved to kind of the east. And then I lived in Malaysia for a year with my two brothers and my mum and dad.
Interesting. How old were you when you did that?
So, Malaysia, I was 11. So, that was pretty cool.
And what took you over there? Family?
Work, well, stuff? We actually figured out it's cheaper to rent a house in Malaysia and then travel the whole of Asia, then just stay in Australia and then go back and forth. So we just did it for a year.
No way, that was fun.
Yeah, it was so cool.
And you went to school over there?
Mm-hmm. We did it.
English-speaking school?
Yeah, but you had to learn Malaysian.
How's your Malaysian now?
Nah, not good.
not that good. No, that's good. So you've got two brothers?
Yeah, two brothers, 19 and 16.
And you're 20?
I'm 21.
21.
I'm nearly 22.
Oof, I'm getting old.
Yeah, I know. Go on.
Pardon me. So, growing up as a kid, what sort of values did your parents instill in you? What were the kind of traits that your family held very closely?
So, my parents are like polar opposites. Like, my mum's like the devil, like, and then my dad's like an angel. So, my dad's actually a psychologist. So, he's very morally correct and like very well put together. Can I swear?
Because yeah,
my mum's like fucked. And like, she's just very, like, fuck people before you get fucked over and stuff. Like, she has a very, like, different way about going about things. And I think, like, that's why I have, like, a good balance because I have both.
Mm, I like that.
Yeah. Saucy.
Yeah. All right. So, growing up, so when you grew up, what kind of hobbies were you into? Were you into sport? Were you more into academic stuff?
I was definitely very academic. Like, I always cared about my grades and stuff. But sport-wise, my parents made me do every sport. Like, I had to do soccer, like, I had to do surfing, nippers, the whole lot. Like, they were those parents. Dance, tried it all. But, yeah, I've always just wanted to do random shit and do my own thing. Like, I never really wanted to stick to any of those sort of things.
It's interesting. So you've surfed a little bit?
Yeah, I've surfed a little bit, done a bit of everything.
Just a little bit of everything, and nothing took your fancy?
No. Like, I just like to be very free and just do whatever I want. Like, I feel like if you have something like a team sport or something, you're very confined to those restrictions, like having the trainings and stuff, and that was the issue with me because I just like to be free and do whatever I want to do.
I like that. I like that idea of trying everything but not going too deep into stuff. But I mean, you get the balance, so sometimes having that discipline is good in certain ways, but obviously the sort of personality that you have, it sounds like you like being free and
doing 100%
whatever you like getting up to. All right, let's fast forward. High school. What was your high school experience like?
I went to 4 high schools.
Tell me about that.
I went to McKellar and I just did not like it. I was in the academic program and it was very like, you have to get like good grades and stuff. And I was like, I don't like, I'm in year 7 and like, I want to have fun. And then I went to Stella and it was private school. And I was like, yuck, like this wasn't for me. But then I got moved to Barker because I was quite like badly behaved at Stella. So I went to Barker. Then Barker was too much of a private school. I was like, hell no. Left there and went to Freshie. And I love Freshie.
Oh, what did you study at Freshie? What were your kind of majors?
I did all the easy shit. I did food technology. I did art. I did advanced English, PD, modern history. And I have to have done one more.
It'll come to you.
Yeah, it'll come
just,
to you.
Just for anyone listening, so we live on the, I grew up on the Northern Beaches too, just around the corner from where Till lives. And Freshwater High School is like your last 2 years of high school. You can kind of leave your normal high school and go to your senior high school, and it's a bit more flexible with trying subjects that are a bit more real world. And a lot of my friends went there, and yeah, obviously Tilly went there to finish. It's kind of the school that anyone who wants to go and have fun and doesn't fit perfectly into the normal school system usually ends up at Freshie to expand their mind to something a little bit more outside the normal confines of high school. Yeah,
I reckon that puts it perfectly. And it's like, it's good because I feel like most private schools which are around here, and then obviously the public education, they're all single sex. So I think it was really interesting to see people go there and be at a school with boys and girls, because that replicates the real world environment, which I don't feel like public schools and private schools often do with that like single sex education. So I think it was actually good to have boys and girls.
Yeah, it's an interesting outtake. I mean, I went to Narrabeen just down the road here. So I went to male, female my whole way through high school. And I've like you said, it is super not real world just being surrounded by the same sex for so long. And then straight into, like for you, into Freshwater would have been a bit of a shock and a bit, you probably would have grown up so quickly in that 2 years.
Well, I went to Barker prior to that. So, and because Barker is only goes into boys and girls in year 10, like, the boys had no idea what to do with the girls. Mm. They were so awkward. They were so socially awkward. They couldn't talk to like them. They couldn't do anything. And it was just such a shock to me because I came from here where we're all so chill and like we don't care like what other people think. We're all best friends with boys and girls. Like, and it was such a like shock to my system to go to this school where nobody had drank alcohol. Like, nobody had touched a girl. Nobody had kissed a girl. And I was like, oh my God, what is going on?
All right, this was going to be later in the podcast, but I want to chat to you about this because this is probably a good little run into it. Maybe a bit awkward, but you're very good on social media and with your profile on bringing up conversations that are quite difficult. What's your thoughts on when it comes to like sexual education? Because you're very open about talking about stuff like that on your socials because it is quite taboo, and especially it probably comes a lot from, like you said, the boys came to when they started seeing girls at school, it completely changes their mindset. So what's your take on that when it comes to school? What was your education around that like? And it's probably non-existent, to be honest. For me, it pretty much was non-existent, anything to do with sex at school.
Yeah, well, okay, this just sounds like crazy, but honestly, I didn't know about like STIs and stuff. And then I go into Big Brother and they're like, go and get an STI test, which is like a swab, like you pee in a cup and you get like a blood test. And I was like, wait, what's this for? And like, I thought like STIs is like a thing that you like, I didn't think it was a thing. Like, I was like, oh, they're just scaring us in high school. But it really wasn't like explained to you. Like, I didn't know like how like herpes is literally stuck with you for life. Like, chlamydia, yeah, you can get rid of it, you take a tablet. Like, gonorrhea, like, I didn't know you have to tell your sexual partner legally if you have something. Like, so I started doing all this research after I had to get an STI test because I was like, what the fuck? We were never taught this. And mind you, I was 20 years old. Like, that's pretty fucking bad. Like, thank God I had nothing. But I was like, when we were taught about condoms and stuff in high school, it's so you don't get pregnant. It's not so you don't get an STI, right? Don't you agree with that? Like, you were taught, like, you don't want to get pregnant. It's like, oh, if you're not on the pill, you have to use a condom. But it's like, no, regardless if you're on the pill, you still don't want an STI. But we were never taught that. So bad.
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting take on it. And I think there's so many subjects in school that the school and the education system are failing us, sexual education being one, mental health being another one, which we're going to talk about shortly, because that's obviously what Good Humans podcast underlying theme is, mental health, because it's something that I obviously am very touched by, and the Good Human Factory, my little mental health thing, is everything to me, and I know it's super important to you, which we will touch on shortly. But let's talk about high school's finished. What was the goals and dreams and aspirations for Tilly, and have they changed now?
Yeah, so I just thought, like, I'm going to be that, like, typical person that goes and finishes my degree and then I'll go traveling. And just, like, that was so unrealistic because I set my goal to get, an ATAR that was over 91. And I was like, I just need 91 to get into business. So I got my ATAR, like, I was fine. I got into business. And I was like, this is not what I thought it was. Uni is not what I thought it would be. Like, I don't like this course. But high school tells you that you're meant to get into a course. You're meant to stick to it and stick it out, but I hated it. So I ended up doing 4 different courses, and I'm only just on my 4th course now that I've found that I liked.
How difficult has been that transition? Can you maybe tell the listeners what those 4 courses have been, how long you're in each one? And something that I listened to your podcast with Nath yesterday for a bit of research, and I was really inspired by the way that you're very happy to change, and so many people get so fixated on, all right, I've locked into this uni subject. Oh, I'm locked into paying for it. I have to finish it and do something and stick to it and are unhappy for so long. What was your thought process with changing subjects and, or like changing courses and just backing yourself with that?
Yeah, see, that's the thing that I think is so sad, because like you think, oh, I'm in $20,000 debt. Like, is $20,000 like worth like your happiness and your future? Like, do you know what I mean? In the big scheme of things, it's not that much money. You're going to pay it off. The government's got you sorted. So it's like, I don't have fear with that. Like, I trust in myself that I'll be able to sort that out. And, like, it is, people find it scary to change. Like, but I think, like, fear is what drives us and makes us do cool things and stuff. So I'm like, if I want to change, like, I'm going to do it. And it's so easy to change. Like, UAC and everything makes it, the system so easy. And, like, everyone's so friendly at uni. Like, it's so, like, it's fun. It's, like, easy. Like, I feel like people shouldn't be afraid to change course. And I think that's really sad that there's a stigma around it that you should stick with what you've chosen and just wait it out and think, oh, I'll start liking it in 3rd year. You won't, you know?
So what are the courses you have studied?
So the first one, I did business at UTS. And I was like, yeah, did not like that. Too much maths. I was thinking it was innovation, making products, like marketing and stuff, but it was finance, stats, like all the shit. I was like, no. Then I went to UNSW and I did journalism, and it just, the vibe of the uni wasn't right for me. I was like, that it was very predominantly, like, this is, I honestly, like, I should be careful saying this, but this is not me being racist, but I really need to, like, work with other people and thrive off other people, and people weren't speaking English there, and I was like, I'm in a journalism course. The purpose of this is to learn to talk to people and interact with people. Yeah, it's communication. And I was like, God, I'm in a class where I'm the only one that's talking, and that was a big no for me. I was like, no, I'm not doing this for the next 4 years of my life. So I left there and went and basically did the same thing at UTS. And I was like, you know what? Like, this is more what I wanted. But then Big Brother came up, so I went on the show. And then during the show, because I'd had to drop out of UTS, my dad was like, oh, by the way, you got accepted into Sydney Uni into a similar course. So I did that.
Yeah. I find it so interesting, the idea that people go to uni to study business, when in nowadays to create a business it needs to be innovative anyway and be different. That, I mean, I've obviously a good case for it, like I haven't gone to uni, but I've got a kind of successful business now, and it's like I've learned so much on my feet, and the amount of times that I talk to people who are doing business and I know more about so much stuff because I'm the one in the real world. Like I built my own website, I created a whole podcast, I like just by 100% by the mindset. I got told a couple of years ago by my psychologist, the act of confidence comes before the feeling of confidence. And I know you guys spoke about that in your podcast with Nath. And it's really cool that he's listened to that quote, because for me, that's everything. I always kind of went like, the fear is what can either scare you from something or drive you towards something. And now I kind of lean into the fear and I go, what's the worst that can happen? Like, I stuff up something that I'm not good at. Like, I'm clearly not good at it. It's the first time I've done it. Like, you can't go into stuff expecting to be really good at it. But if you act like you're confident and you know it's going to, like, it works a wonder for me. That's kind of the whole last 3 years of building a business and building the Good Human Factory has just been like, oh, I don't know how to public speak in front of people. And I stand up in front of 500 kids at a time and talk about mental health now, which is like, I haven't studied much other than just gone out and look for stuff, because there's so much great information out there from YouTube to books. And having that responsibility and curiosity of the world is so important, I think. And it sounds like you've kind of gathered that now as well with your business that you're looking, that you're starting at the moment. So we will touch on that later too. But let's go. This is something that I'm interested to talk to you about. So you've spoken in other podcasts and through the media that prior to the Big Brother house, you're in a bit of a dark place. Can you, as much as you're willing to, tell me what that was from, if there was any underlying reasons why you're feeling that way, and how you got yourself out of those dark places?
Yeah, well, okay, I had like severe like OCD like my whole life. It started in like year three exactly. Like, I can remember like the first time I was like, holy shit, and it was with numbers and stuff, and like odd numbers and stuff were like really triggering, and it was like affecting me throughout like high school, my grades and everything. And that was the first thing, because people don't realize how much OCD fucks you up. And everyone thinks it's, oh, I want to be like a neat freak, like I'm trying to make sure everything's clean. It's not. It's so like consuming. It's so fucked up what OCD does to you. And that was like the first thing before I got anything fixed and like talked to anyone.
Yeah. How's that with your dad being a psychologist?
Well, see, that was very convenient, because he obviously like would have recognized the signs and the symptoms, and he was able to direct it when I went to the psychologist, because often a psychologist is going to misdiagnose you. They only know what you're telling them. But if somebody's observing you every day, they're going to more so be able to say, not diagnose you, because obviously he's my dad, but he could say to the psychologist, hey, look, this is what's happening. And it helped a lot.
Because it's very hard as a patient to communicate to a psychologist how they're feeling, because we don't very often, society finds it very difficult to talk about their feelings to each other, especially men. But in all people, it's hard to communicate how you're feeling to a psychologist. And like you said, so many people must get misdiagnosed, for one, for lack of communication, but for two, for fear of telling people how they're really feeling. And yeah, I just don't think many people know. And that's why for me, it's so important to like meditate and have the self-awareness of how you're feeling and take a step back from the fast-paced life we're living through. But so what was your experience with that once you saw a psychologist? Was that helpful for you?
So the talking part, I didn't find therapeutic. Like, I'm the person that really needs to just do it on my own. Like you said, how you meditate and you recognize your feelings. I'm that person that can literally sit there and I will just deal with my feelings on my own. And people say like, you need to talk to someone, but I don't. Like, I think that is, if your coping mechanism is to just be by yourself and like appreciate your own feelings and what you're going through, I think that's very like mature and that's very helpful. But I also got on fluoxetine, which was an antidepressant, and that helped with like the depression and the anxiety that was coming from the OCD. So that definitely helped. But that just made me so brain dead, man. That medication is fucked. Like, so bad. I wouldn't recommend it to anyone.
Yeah. I've got a really good book. I'm going to actually do you read much?
Yeah, I read.
So there's a book called Lost Connections. And it's all about mental health. And it's like, I feel like I've been doing mental health stuff the last couple of years. And I've almost finished it at the moment. And I've learned so much that we're not told about. Like, when it came to antidepressants, it was all about like change, that mental health issues are chemical imbalances in your brain. But it's almost been proven now that it definitely is to a couple percent, but it's more so about your situation that you've been in, your trauma that you've dealt with, the friendship circles you're in, the kind of connections that you have with people. Yet we're kind of sold so often that it's like, here, take this pill and you're going to feel better. And it's like, no, the chemical imbalance is because of something else. And yeah, but anyway, I got to give you this book. Anyone listening, Lost Connections, it's unbelievable book, and it'll change the way that you think about mental health, because he goes really deeply into how pharmaceutical companies used the chemical imbalance as a marketing tool, and now that's what everything's run by the pharmaceuticals. But that's not what this podcast is about, because I can chat for days about that stuff.
Yeah, that's so true. But when I remember this friend, she's a fucking bitch, I'm not friends with her anymore, but I remember she said to me, she was like, your antidepressants are all placebo, there's nothing in that tablet, like, and like, because everyone was going off this like chemical imbalance crap. But you're so right, it is literally the situations that you've been put in and the stuff that like is surrounding you that creates that. Like, you can have that chemical imbalance, whatever, but like other stuff has to trigger it, you know, 100%. So that's BS.
Yeah, definitely. But seriously, that book will change the way you think about mental health. I'll get it for you. I'll get it for you as a little gift for Christmas. But I've said that to three people. I've got three of them I've got to buy, so it's all good. I'll put you on the list. Okay, so Big Brother, crazy experience. Tell me about Big Brother. Tell me, actually, let's go to the start. How did it come about? What made you want to apply for Big Brother? And what was the application process like?
So I was just like in a pretty bad place. Like, everyone says like you lose your high school friends, and like that had finally happened. And like, I was very aware of like what was happening, and my mom lost all her work through COVID. So honestly, like, I wasn't spending any money or anything. Like, I was like trying to help out my family. And my mom's a designer and like done big international stuff. Like, she's very successful. So all her work was gone, so I was like depressed over that, because my mum was depressed. I was like, had lost all my friends. Like, I'm not even saying that, like, I was not going out on the weekend. Like, I had like really bad anxiety and stuff. I was always fascinated by the human experiment behind it. Like, these reality shows, I was very aware of the fact that this is all a human experiment. This is all just playing with your mind. Like, I knew that before I went in, and that was perhaps why I was good at the game. But that intrigued me so much, and I knew that that self-awareness was like a reason that I would be good in there. So I just gave it a crack. But the whole audition process, I'd like had these dreams, and just like the universe sounds fucked, but like, I just knew I was in. Like, I knew for a while, like, something's coming. I didn't know what it was, and I just knew that that was it. Do you know what I mean?
How hard is it to trust that?
It's not hard to trust that, because you just have to trust yourself. In the end, you only have yourself. Like, you don't have anyone else. Like, your family, like, yeah, that's it. But besides that, everyone's here for their own interests, you know?
Yeah.
So I just had to know, like, your gut is so incredible. And these things that, like, are coming to me in dreams and stuff, like, I don't think I'm psychic, but everything always is coming true in my dreams, and I don't have them often, but I have them, and they're weird, they don't make sense, but then the thing happens and I'm like, okay, that's what it is. And like, I just knew.
Manifesting.
Yeah, it is manifesting. And it's cringe, like, people think, oh, I wish I get $1 million, like, that's what I'm manifesting, to get $1 million. No, you have to go and work for it. Like, it's not just to manifest it. Like, you actually put it into the world, and then you go and do it for yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. You can't just expect stuff to happen. You have to give yourself the opportunity.
Yes, and they're the people that say manifesting's bullshit. No, manifesting is not bullshit. You just have to work for it.
Yeah.
It's the lazy people that think, oh, 11-11, I'm going to make a wish and it's going to come true. No, you're not going to win the lottery. You need to go and, like, make yourself that money, you know?
Let's talk about making it happen, because I know your application process, it sounds like you played the game from the start. You're always very conscious of the way that you're perceived in the house, but you sounds like you're always very conscious of how you're perceived in the application process too. What was that journey like?
So in the application process, I understood that to them I was a product. Like, I'm not a person, like, I'm just like a player in this game, but who I am is completely irrelevant. How they market me is everything. So I knew, like, I was had to give them what value am I to them? What part do I play? What persona am I offering as a character, some would say, in their game? And like, what boxes do I tick? Because in the end, it's about ticking boxes, right? Definitely. That's what the casting is. Like, you get your person from like Spain, you get your person from here.
You want to hear something funny?
Yeah.
I got headhunted like last minute for your season.
Yeah, you told me.
Oh, I did tell you that. Yeah.
Done it.
No, I didn't get called back because I didn't play the game like you. They're like, so what are you going to bring to the house? And I was like, I'll probably like teach everyone to meditate in the morning. And they're like, yeah, see you later, mate.
Bye.
Yeah, the boring yeah. mental health guy. Yeah. So yeah, I got half headhunted and then didn't get the third call back, but. Looked like you guys had a lot of fun in there.
Yeah, no, so, it was fun.
All right, I want to touch on this quickly. When you got into the house, you had your TikTok freckle thing. Tell me about that.
Like, I can't even explain to you how depressing that was because everything, it had already been such a bad year. I did not let the cameras, I said, stop filming me when it was off. I slept every night with a mask on. Now I don't care. I'm like, whatever. But at the time, I was so embarrassed by that. I told everyone it was a microneedling injury. I didn't tell anyone what it was. I thought the producers wouldn't put me on the show.
No way.
Yeah,
so tell me what happened. Tell the listeners what happened.
So
it's funny. You can own
well,
it.
It's funny
you can
now. Own it now. I have a laugh about it now. At the time, I was traumatized. But I literally just saw a TikTok video of a girl tattooing her own freckles. I ordered the ink on eBay. I ordered the needles on eBay because you can't really get it anywhere else because it's dodgy. Like, no one sells that shit because you're going to sue them when it goes bad. Hence, I got it on eBay for like $20. Oof. And it's like when I woke up in the morning after I'd done it, I did it in the dark because I was like, if my parents come in, they're going to kill me. Like, what am I doing? And I was like confident in myself. The girl said it lasts for 3 months. And I was like, it'll look cute on BB, right? Like, I'm like, I won't have to wear makeup. I'll just lie in the sun. I'm going to have freckles. And then I woke up in the morning and there was scabs over my entire face. Like, so bad.
So what do you do? You like dip needles in ink and then...
And then you just,
face.
Yeah, pretty much. But I obviously went way too deep, which I didn't know. Didn't sterilize the needle or anything like that. And then in the morning, I was like, fuck, like, how am I going to hide this? Get my makeup brush, put makeup all over my face. What I didn't realize is when you're, like, girls on a night out, they're like, hey, want some makeup? Like, I'll fix your face up. Every time you're putting it on someone else's face, bacteria. Every time you put it back in your back, bacteria. Every time you touch your beauty blender, bacteria. I literally infected my own face.
Oh,
by putting makeup on.
That plays very much into your category that you put yourself in on the show, though,
exactly,
to play dumb.
Exactly. But you know how everything happens for a reason. Like, I truly believe that. And for me to say in my audition, they were like, what happened to your face? Like, I was like, oh, it was some microneedling thing that I did at home. They're obviously like, this bitch is dumb. Like, they obviously wanted it, right? Like, I kind of like, I'm like, okay, that's why that happened, you know?
Yeah, but I love that you own it. I love that you take accountability because so many people make a mistake and don't take accountability for it, like try and blame somebody else. And it's like, I love that you took accountability with it. So let's talk about In the House. Playing dumb was kind of the, because that's how I discovered you. I saw you on Big Brother and I was like, this chick's cool. I was like, this chick is just fun, having a good time. But you could always tell that there was more to you than, like, you were winning challenges. You like, the best thing was when you got in that bus at the start and you put the earplugs in the airplane in your nose. Fully calculated. You knew they were earplugs?
Bloody oath, I knew they were earplugs. Like, but people don't know that shit. Like, they're thinking, like, that I'm actually stupid. I'm like, obviously I did that so you guys would think that.
But,
and I was also, like, playing producers. Like, you know that, like, obviously it is my personality, but you amplify it. Like, I was going in there to entertain people because in my mind I knew producers would probably help me out and keep me in longer.
See, that's smart. See, when I had the idea that I might be going in, I was like, I'm just going to try win every challenge. I'm going to, like, be everyone's friend. I reckon I would have been out in about a week. I would have been probably the guy that thought he was too good and won a challenge and then everyone voted out. But you seemed to, like, slide under the radar really well. How was that, like, being in a house where you were playing a game? It was super calculated. Watching you do it, it was like, I thought if I went in, I'd just go have fun and see what happened. But you sound like you went in there not to win the game, but to entertain people and to have fun and to, play what was a good game in the end. You got stitched up at the end. But what was the most challenging thing when you're in there? Was it hard to stay in character that whole time? Because you've almost said you pretty much were in character most of the time. It would have been taxing.
Well, like, it's still like, it wasn't in character, it was my personality, but like everything I was doing is like shit that I would actually do. It was more like I just do something random when I was around like the other housemates. Like when I'd go in the diary room, I was completely myself. Like, I was like, and when I was around people that I trusted, completely myself. But when I was around other people, I was like, okay, you have to be an idiot. And like, I'm also aware of the fact that they want good shit for TV. They need good shit for TV. So I'm like, oh, what's something funny that I can do? What's something funny that I can say? And I'm not, like, putting it on. Like, that is me. But it's, like, being more conscious of being a fun, entertaining person. So that did get tiring because, like, you're not going to get airtime if you're sitting on the couch, you know? Like, you're going to get airtime if you're going around, running around the hallways, doing stupid shit. And this wasn't about airtime for me. This was about the fact that I genuinely believe that they would keep me on the show if I was more entertaining.
Yeah. As much as they try and get rid of some people, like, as much as they try make it out, like, it's not that it's rigged, but there's definitely, like, places, people that get helped, like, I don't know.
Yeah, watching well, think it, Danny Hayes, like, he had a pretty good run. Like, a few people had a good run. And you know what? Those people were giving the producers what they needed. They knew what they were doing. So they deserved that, you know?
For sure.
They made the show what it was.
Some of those challenges looked like, I was like, this, some of the challenges must have been, like, watching, like, because I'm really good friends with Katie Williams.
Yeah.
So watching her and some of the challenges not win the fitness ones is like... They would have been tough, eh? A lot of the challenges would have been so draining and different to what they would have looked on TV.
Yeah, well, they went genuinely for hours. But another thing that you have to understand is people weren't all there for genuine reasons. So, like, people who genuinely needed it, like, fuck, I needed that money, man. Like, and I needed to be there for myself because I was just so lost last year. That, like, drive, pain becomes nothing. You do not feel it anymore. Like, I had... I would say in my head, pain is temporary, pain is temporary. So it's like, it looks like those challenges are hard, yes, but, and you have somebody who's as fit as Katie, but like, it's how bad you want it, because I would have bled and I wouldn't have cared. Like, I would have stayed there. I would have pissed myself on a challenge. I wouldn't have cared. Like, but that's when it comes into that, like, yeah, those challenges are hard, but how bad do you want it? Like, pain is pain. Like, it goes away, you know? Like, if you really wanted it, you would tolerate that pain.
Yeah. I've got another good book for you.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the two books that I recommend highly to anyone listening. And this brings me perfectly to it. There's a book called Grit by Angela Duckworth. And it's all about the psychology behind somebody who's gritty, who has resilience, will outweigh somebody who has talent every single day. And there's a whole bunch of data behind it. And this book's unbelievable. And it's a really good testament to what you were just saying. Like, you might be the fittest, you might be the strongest, but if you don't want it the most, you're going to get beaten by the person who wants it the most pretty often. So it's a good little leeway into pushing that book.
That is so true.
Yeah, it's a really good book. It's really interesting. And it's backed by a lot of data and a lot of science. Actually, no, I'm going to bring something else with I'll bring something else up with you later. But in the house, how important was having healthy relationships with people? For one, for the game, but for two, for your mental health, to be able to stay sane? Because how many days were you in there in the end?
So I was in there for 58 days. But, yeah, the relationships is the most important thing. And I naturally am very able to talk to people. I'm not an awkward person. So I did have a healthy relationship with, like, every single person in that house. I was actively making sure I knew every person in that house. I don't know if you remember my first... That one time I was up for eviction at the start, I said, Marley, your girlfriend is this person. Like, you, your sister is this person. You played this, blah, blah, blah. I was actively, like... remembering every conversation people had with me, like, but I didn't give a fuck. Like, I don't.
Sorry, Marley.
Yeah, no, I love Marley. He's my best friend, but like, I don't give a fuck who your girlfriend is. Like, do you know what I mean? But like, so that was like also part of my game. And yeah, that is for your mental health. But to be honest, like, really only like a few people I really was having those good relationships with. Like, I wasn't actually, like, having to just do this to keep myself in the game. Like, Mary, Marley, and the Charlottes, and Danny. Like, I didn't really care about having good relationships with other people. It was more just the game.
But do you think that's a good parallel to the real world? Like, you don't need, like, the Big Brother house is, like...
It's a microcosm.
A microcosm of the real world, all these different personalities. So do you think it's a pretty good parallel to that, that you don't need to have... a million friends, you just need to have a few people around you who you can trust and who you can rely on when you are having those up and down days, because I'm sure in the house there's some serious down days. Can you tell me about what was the toughest experience in the house?
Like, honestly, like, it was literally like my eviction. Like, I don't have really any memory of it, but it was so hard. Like, obviously, but then to go out to somebody like Mary, who was like my second mum, that's why those relationships were so important. because then she'd been evicted, so she knew what it was like. But after like 4 days in that room.
Yeah, do you want to explain what happened for your eviction? Because I'm sure not every listener would have watched Big Brother, but you got pretty stitched up at the end.
So like 3 days before the end, like one of my alliance, my good friend, who I would not have put up, I was protecting him and everything, like Sid, I honestly, like I would not have touched him, I thought, and he won the challenge and I was so excited. I was like, I'm here for another day, I'm going to be top seven, like there's 4 days left. There was 4 days left of the show or something. So, or 4 or 5, something like that. And then, yeah, Sid put me up and I was just, like, heartbroken. I was like, fuck. Like, that was my first, like, glimpse of the real world, that people do what they need for themselves. Mm. Nobody cares about you. Because I genuinely, like, cared about this guy. I wouldn't have put him up. Like, I didn't want him at the end with me. I would say that. But down the end, yeah, dog eat dog. But it didn't need to be done that early. Mm. I would have benefited his game anyway. But, yeah, so when he put me up, I went to the diary room and I just like said like goodbye. Like I just knew I was going. There was no doubt in my mind. And then, yeah, I got, went after I was evicted.
Well, you got thrown a bone, like you said, because the producers love you. Because it is a game. Like as much as people are like, oh, that's unfair, they get another chance. It's like, well, 100%. You're the one making the show get numbers and that's what the show's for.
But then like I'd won like 8 challenges. Like I'd broken the records and stuff. Like, and I was the youngest person, like not like cheating my own horn, but I deserved a second chance compared to other people.
Yeah.
So when I did get that second chance, I was put in that room for like 2 days by myself, like 2 or 3 days by the end of it, 2 nights by myself.
Was it the 3 days in a room that was full mirrors, huh?
Yeah, all mirrors, and the lights didn't turn off, I might add.
That's really bad. Yeah, what did your dad think of that after?
Oh, my dad was like, fuck. Like, when the promo started coming out, because I just had to explain to my family. I couldn't say this is what it was. Like, I just had to explain it. But when they saw it, they're like, I can't, it's hard to comprehend. But I looked it up and it was
torture tactic,
prisoner
probably.
Of war technique used in Nazi Germany. Yeah, it was actually used, like, to torture people. And I was like, fuck. I honestly had no issues in there because I thought I was going back into the game for that whole 3 days. So then when it was Russian roulette between myself and Ari, the other contestant, as to who was going back in, my gut, like this is what I said, when you say trust your gut knows. That entire time, I knew I was gone. Like, you can see it on my face, you can see it in my eyes, and then I finally pick up the box. And it was so heavy because all the other boxes were light. And this box just had this fat red diamond in it. And I already knew. And you can see, like, people say you see the light go out of someone's eyes. But, like, the light was actually gone in my eyes. I see the videos and I'm like, oh, my God. Like, it's, like, I'm dead. Like, I basically felt dead. I felt like I've been shot. Like when my grandparents died and stuff, like, I've had, like, a few people close to me die. It didn't feel like anything. It didn't even compare, which is so crazy because that just shows you what that environment does to you.
Oh, and it shows how much it meant to you because you did touch on that before. Yeah. It's like it's so important to you. Let's talk now. How different is life now that you're out of the house? And what was – this is something I wanted to chat to you about. What was that buffer period like between getting out of the house and it airing? How long was it? And then it's like you're like, well, I'm a bit – maybe not famous, but I'm about to – be in the limelight. I've already finished the show. I know how I've gone. I know how everyone else has gone. Like, how hard is it keeping that secret?
So, no one's ever asked me that. That's actually a very good question. But it's so we, I got out.
I suck at secrets. Yeah. So I would be so bad.
Well, you've signed an NDA.
Oh, you've signed so many because people can bet on it and stuff. But yeah.
Yeah, but so I got out December 15 and I came home to all these messages. Like,
And we're in lockdown here, eh, with COVID?
Yeah, but they all knew because the security at the house had told people that I was in it. So it had gotten out. So I'm now dealing with the fact that I'd just been evicted and fucking traumatized from that. I'd also gone back to my shit life with like no friends and like not going out or anything. So that was bad as well. So I'd gone back to that. Then I'm dealing with producers like and the publicists and stuff. And I'm like, I promise I haven't told anyone. Like this genuinely is just like,
oh, so it got out that you're in the house.
That's what I'm saying. It was leaked because of the security and multiple people, producers, were from the Northern Beaches. So people obviously don't, they're not going and telling the media and stuff, but oh, I'm just going to quickly tell my brother. My brother tells his best friend. My best friend, oh, don't tell anyone, but, you know, then everyone knows. So that was very stressful. I feel like it always gets leaked.
I knew multiple people that were going into the house. Once I got told about it, I had, like, Chinese whispers from other people. Like,
yeah.
I had, like, three friends that I thought were going to be in the house that didn't end up being in there that I was like, oh, I thought they were going to be in there. But anyway, it's a so that buffer period was interesting, huh?
Yeah, no, it was interesting. And then the next thing that happens is the promo gets released and my face is in it and, like, my thing that's, like, I'm going to act dumb and play smart and my face is in it, my voice is in it, but they haven't released my name. So then for, like, a month and a bit, I'm waiting for my personal promo because they've just seen my face and I'm still not allowed to tell people I'm on the show, even though my face and my voice is in the goddamn first promo.
But don't, like, media work it out who you are straight away from that. Yeah,
so they did figure it out, but I was still in the position where I'm not allowed to tell anyone, so I was like, fuck.
Yeah, you got people calling you to ask you about it, but you're, like, not allowed to actually say it to you.
Yeah, and imagine, like, your parents and your brothers are all so excited, so they're like, I want to tell people.
They can't tell anyone either, because obviously they know, but it's like...
And and then my brother's like...
My mum would tell everyone.
Yeah, that's the thing. I could never do it. They're gossipers. My mum wants to tell everyone as well. I'm like, shut up, bitch.
Oh, okay. So once it's aired, how different is life now? You happier now?
So much happier. And
not because of the fame, but because people get to see who you are, it sounds like.
Yeah, no. And it was just such a... I'm not happy because of any of that stuff. Like, my life is better for it. But I'm happy that I understand the world. Like, I'm 21 years old and the shit that you go through in there is nothing compares. Like, honestly, nothing. Death, like I was saying to you. Nothing is, as there's no life lessons that could come in the world that came in that 58-day period. Like, I learned everything. I'm so, like, emotionally aware and emotionally intelligent from that. And I don't mean that in an arrogant way, but that is why my life is better. I don't trust people. I don't fuck with people that are fucking me over. Like, if you screw me over, goodbye. Like, the second Sid put me up for eviction, my whole world changed. The second I was physically evicted, my whole world changed. Suddenly, people cannot be trusted, and suddenly, good people don't get what they deserve. People who deserve things don't get... You don't win in the end. Like, it just... Like, that's what I thought. I thought, you deserve something, you get it. Like, it's yours. But that's not the case. And that is really good for me to know. Now, like, for a 21-year-old to understand the stuff that I understand, I'm so better for it. Do you know what I mean?
For sure. Yeah. So watching you in the house, like, I'm super inspired by, and now even on social media, how unapologetically you are yourself. Where does that confidence come from? It sounds like you pretty much just answered that. It came from the house, yeah?
Well, I had it my whole life, but obviously nobody ever saw it, like, because you weren't watching me on national TV. Like, I always was like that. I think, like, ADHD just... I just accept that I just say the shit that I think and it just, like, whatever consequence comes with it, comes with it. And you know what? I don't care if people like me. That's the thing. Everyone wants approval from people. I don't care if you don't like me. I don't care if you don't want to talk to me. Like, you know, like, that's the thing. So I'm, like, one of those people you love or you hate. I see such, like, awful comments about me and I laugh about it. But that's the difference with me. People get so cut over that stuff. I laugh about it. You just have to take the piss, you know?
Exactly. It's like, you don't know who I... Like, if somebody hasn't met you, for anybody to judge based on what they've seen, for one on a TV show or on social media, it's like, all right, let me have a look at your social media profile and then make a judgment on you and see how you like it. I don't know you. I'm not going to judge it. And so, like, it's such a immature way to look at the world. And online bullying and, it's just like, it boils my blood knowing how common it happens. But... Yeah, what's your experience been like with online bullying?
The funniest thing is the trolls always have in their bio, be kind or like some shit like that. They're like, love others so you can love yourself. Like, what are you talking about? You literally just told me I'm like some skanky slut from the Northern Beaches. I'm like, what do you mean?
Yeah, you haven't even met me. I've been in a show for the last 2 years struggling and you're telling me I'm a slut from the Northern Beaches.
Yeah, like, it's so funny to read and it doesn't impact me. Like, I don't care. Like, I'm very grateful for that. But I can see, you can see how that would get to some people.
What do you put that down to? Because there's probably a lot of young girls out there listening or anybody listening who do get affected when people say negative stuff. I mean, sure, I every now and then you still read the stuff, and as much as you can brush it off, it still hurts every now and then. But what advice do you have for someone who does get quite affected by it?
Yeah, you just have to take the piss. Like, genuinely, life is a joke. Like, life's going to fuck you before, like, anything else. Like, you just have to get on with it. Like, you don't want to sit there sobbing. Like, I've dealt with so many people. I know so many people and their stories from these shows and stuff now. And it literally put them in a ditch. And I'm like, how are you going to enjoy this, like, amazing experience? Like, but that's just the same with life. People don't realize how short life is. Like, it's so long, but it's also so short. So, like, you just can't care about that stuff, you know? Like, the only one that ever got me was someone said, it's crocodile tears. And I was like, fuck you, because I cry once a year. Like, I don't cry. Like, I'm a very tough person. But besides that, like, you just laugh at it. Like, who has the time to do that, you know? And it's not personal. They don't know you.
Yeah.
I mean, it probably is my friends writing it on burner accounts, but
fuck them.
Yes, it is. Trust me. Sometimes I'm like, I get a hate message and I'm like, I know who you are.
You reckon?
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, that's so toxic.
Yeah, it's fucked. And like, stuff gets leaked to the media. And I'm like, nobody else would know that besides this person. And I'm like, so that's from you. Thank you.
No way. Oh, that's disgusting.
Yeah, it is so bad, but it is what it is.
People look for any opportunity out there nowadays, huh? All right, I've got a few little questions to finish with.
Yeah.
What inspires you?
Or
who inspires
you? Paris Hilton inspires me. But I just did a campaign for fucking Paris Hilton's new show last night. And like the other day, like, that was the first time and I was like, oh my God, like, dreams do come true. Your manifestations can come true. Because out of this whole thing, I was like, my manager was like, what do you want? I was like, the one thing I want is somehow to do a Paris Hilton campaign. And then on Monday I got it. And I was like, holy fuck. Like, I like had no words because like they bought the pink stretch Hummer. Like they bought the fake invitation to her wedding. Like they bought 3 2-hours and they're like dressed like Paris, like act like Paris. And I was like, oh my God, like how crazy is it to be doing that campaign for Hey You, which in hindsight is for a person that I'm like obsessed with and like inspires me more than anyone else. So I was like, holy shit. Like that was cool.
And what inspires you about her?
Her, like, she took her opportunity, like she took her family's fame and she did something with it. She had that one little opening and she didn't just take her grandfather's money. She didn't just take her dad's money. She has made like 18 businesses or something. She's like made so much money. She's doing everything she loves. She's also doing her music. Like, and she talks about the mental health side of things. She knows when to put on that persona, but she also knows when to take it off. And I'm just like, I'm literally so inspired by this person. Like, she is so bloody cool.
Okay, so what's 5-year plan for Tilly? What do you got coming up? What's the goals coming up and how are you going to achieve them?
So, goals at the moment is my business, which is like in homewares and stuff. That's my main priority at the moment, trying to get that running. I also really want to travel. I'd like to finish uni, potentially. Don't know, don't really care. If my business works, I'm planning on making a second business. Like, I've already got these things in the works. So, yeah, it is business. And it's like you said, I don't need the education for it. So that's the plan. And just, I want to do a podcast as well. That's pretty much it.
Nice.
Yeah.
I think you'll do good at a podcast. You're a good speaker.
Yeah, I'll talk shit.
Entertaining, but talk shit as well. Nah, it's good. All right. Last question I love to ask everyone on this podcast. What does being a good human mean to Tilly?
Being a good human is not trying to be good to everyone. It's focusing on having quality relationships with the people that you care about and making sure that you enhance their life because they're enhancing the value of your life, because you can't focus on being good to everyone. So focus on the people that actually matter and have that small like group of friends, and that'll like enhance your life.
I love that.
Yeah.
Very well said. Well, thank you so much for coming on Good Humans Podcast. It's nice to be back recording and back speaking to amazing, inspiring people just like yourself. And yeah, any last words for the listeners?
No, thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much. Enjoy your day, everyone. And yeah, that was Tilly Whitfield.
This has been a Wellbeing Network podcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com. Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.